Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I am your allergy-stricken host, Andrew Baker, here with my co-host as usual, Graham Moen. How's it going, Graham?
No allergies, so I'm doing good.
If my voice sounds scratchy, you know why. Although Graham has told me it doesn't sound like anything, so I probably didn't even need to say this, but here we are. And also here we are. The Browns are tied for first in the AFC North after the disaster of two of the first three games and, you know, just so much that seems like the sky is falling. The Browns went into 3-0 or 2-1 Baltimore, rather, and pretty much laid the smackdown on the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, the score does not indicate really the game, because after the first half where it was a close game, I mean, the Browns outscored the Ravens, what was it, 32-18, and that one touchdown didn't come until way late in the game. So really, when it mattered, they outscored the Ravens 30-11. So, and once the second half came around, you could clearly see the Browns were just a different team than they had been, and they were just rolling on all cylinders. I mean, there's a lot of different things we can get into when it talks about the Browns, but when it was an overall performance, the Browns, that was by far the most complete performance we've seen out of them this year, and it was a joy to watch, let me just say. Every facet of the team was just playing really well.
It looked like last year's Browns.
It looked, and, yeah, the second half Browns.
Especially the offense, but, yeah, you know, it was weird because it was close at halftime, and I think the Browns had really outplayed the Ravens.
They had. It should have been more.
And I was like, at halftime going in, I was like, I don't know, man. Harbaugh is a pretty good coach. You know, there might be some adjustments coming out. Mm-hmm. And it was the exact opposite. The Browns really, like you said, laid the smackdown in the second half. So I think the number one most important thing that kind of happened, obviously, was the offense. I think the defense has been pretty solid this year in general. Mm-hmm. But I think Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield kind of just got back to what they were doing last year. I think Freddie got back to kind of just running the offense the way he wanted to. There was a lot of 12 personnel, which is two tight ends.
Yeah.
That was to major success, including throwing to like tight ends, which was
Ricky Seals-Jones.
Really, yeah, Ricky Seals-Jones is apparently the second coming of Kellen Winslow.
No,
Kellen Winslow, not Junior. Kellen
Winslow. Oh, his dad. Okay. Yeah.
And, yeah, don't worry. He's not going to be raping old ladies. Yes, just in case you didn't know it, the Browns' old tight end, Kellen Winslow Jr., rapes old ladies. So just in case you didn't know, congrats that I've told you. Anyways, yeah, I mean, I was really impressed by the Browns. I had no idea what to expect. We said in the podcast that if the Browns could just get like 24 points, they'd probably win. So we thought the defense could be good enough. And like you said, the Ravens scored that late touchdown in junk time. But besides that, they were held under 20 points.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that we both saw, and it was pretty obvious, and we said this last week, as the offense goes, so does Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield. Baker was staying in the pocket a lot more and doing a lot more of moving, you know, up in the pocket or moving to the sides. And the offensive line did a really good job. I mean, they were protecting him really well. He had a lot of time to throw the ball. But at the same time, Freddie Kitchens really did take control of the offense, and it was interesting because there was a lot of shotgun.
The Ravens are frauds. I'm sorry. Just keep going. You said there's a lot of shotgun.
Well, there was a lot of shotgun early in the season. It was a lot of that. But this game specifically, they ran a lot more things under center, which even Baker said, you know, that helps him with the play action and stuff. It helps create a lot more things like that. And also when you're getting explosive runs out of Nick Chubb, that really, in that same personnel, that really opens up a lot of different things and motion that was happening in the offense.
Well, and the majority of the success they had last year wasn't out of the shotgun. So it didn't make sense to us that they started the year off doing pretty much three wide shotgun. You know what I mean?
Well, shotgun was something that, you know, Baker's comfortable with as a player that played in an air raid type scheme under Lincoln Riley when he was in Oklahoma. And also when he was at Texas Tech, he played in the same type of offense. So shotgun is comfortable for him, but he looked really good taking the ball under center and either handing it off to Chubb and creating some weird play action things.
Did you see that handoff?
I mean, this is the second year in a row that Nick Chubb had an 80-plus yard touchdown run.
Yeah.
And everyone said that this week in the national media, it was the fastest a player has gone this year. Everyone forgets how fast Nick Chubb is. But he was running about 22 miles an hour. And then, of course, everyone also brought up Baker running down the field at like 19 miles an hour.
Yeah, just flailing his arms like an insane person.
Yeah, I mean, he has that one thing whenever a big play happens, he runs down the field and kind of goes, woo, woo, woo.
That's literally, and just flails his arms.
Yeah, and he goes crazy, which we love Baker for that. But in terms of the way he played, he was just staying inside the offense. He was taking what was coming to him, even with the fact that they were their best offensive player, Odell Beckham, was pretty much just phased out of the game, which brought in other areas of the team to happen. Like, and you said this before we even started, Jarvis Landry finally made an appearance.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that I had mentioned on the podcast last week. And I know you're a huge Jarvis Landry fan in general. He's my favorite
player on the Browns.
But they just hadn't used him at all. And yes, even with Rashard Higgins and Callaway both being out, they pretty much – and Njoku. At a certain point, like, Jarvis Landry's really good, and he gets open. And I wasn't really sure why they weren't using him, but it seems like – it seems to, like, to me that the Titans game was almost just kind of like, well, it was opening week, just forget about it and move on. Mm-hmm. They beat the Jets, and it was like, all right, we're starting round into form. Then it seemed like that Rams game was finally kind of an eye-opener where they were like, okay, look, we got to change some stuff.
Yeah.
And then clearly someone had a talk or showed Baker some film, because in that Rams – the offensive line is thought to be one of the weaknesses of this team, and I think they've actually been pretty decent.
I'd say they'd be average, and at their best, they've been above average.
Exactly. And Baker in week three against the Rams, we had mentioned on the podcast, was just sprinting out of the pocket for no reason. He had coverage, mm-hmm. and he was just running his offensive lineman into sacks and then pressure. And he just basically calmed down, read the field, threw the ball when it was there. Like you said, stepped up in the pocket. He wasn't just wildly scrambling. And the offensive line played extremely well against a relatively tough front in the Ravens. And I think mm-hmm. going into the game, the Ravens were missing their best run blocker. I can't remember his name now.
Brandon Williams.
There you go, Brandon Williams. And going into the game, I kind of had some optimism because of that, because I was thinking that, well, look, if there's ever a time to get Nick Chubb really going, it's now. And you know what? Nick Chubb is 5'11", 225, and
run.
Just bowls people over, and yet – he can – I mean, look, he is a rare physical talent at running back. He really is. And some of the runs he makes, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as this guy, but some of his running style honestly reminds me of early Adrian Peterson, where he's just – if you just try and arm tackle him, he's just going straight through it. If you hit him, he keeps spinning and chucking forward for yards, and then he'll just eventually blow one through the line at some point and just run past you. I mean, he's a dominant running back.
I was going to say Jamal Lewis was
being some people have made that comparison.
Like Jamal Lewis was at the Ravens.
Yeah, like the Ravens, Jamal Lewis destroyed the Browns over and over again. And hopefully we can have years of, you know, Nick Chubb doing this to the Ravens. But in general, you know, Freddie really seemed to kind of say, hey, look, I'm the head coach for a reason. I'm the head coach because I'm a great play caller. I'm a head coach because I'm a great offensive mind. And they really ran a lot of his type of plays. They ran that like reverse, like
the shovel pass to Landry,
the option to a wide receiver option where Landry had the option of pitching it to OBJ.
Yeah,
that is the type of play you just don't see that in the NFL. That's a really, really creative play. And there were a lot of, you know, kind of quick hitting plays, a lot of runs for Chubb, and like you said, a lot of under center. And I think that the Browns kind of just got back to what they were doing last year more, and Baker was able to just relax. The offensive line had by far its best showing of the season. And, you know, Jarvis Landry's good and Nick Chubb is good. And if you play a similar style that you're accustomed to, like from last year, and you still have these talented guys, there's no reason the Browns offense shouldn't be performing like that. And that's kind of what we were seeing. And there it was, you know?
I mean, Nick Chubb, the way he runs in between the tackles, but then can also break outside. Like there was a lot of plays where he was running outside, or it was a play designed to go outside the tackle where he just blew by defenders. Like
Ravens are frauds. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You always think that he's a little bit slower than he is just because of the build. And I think he always gets a little underestimated, even by own Browns fans, including myself, just how fast he really is and how explosive he is. Cause he'll be in his stance and he'll run, but as soon as he hits that gear where gets his explosiveness in, it's like you said, he breaks tackles like with ease. He does spin moves. He can juke and do a one cut. I mean, the touchdown he scored on was a toss play. That was a really good run blocking. But as soon as he saw that hole, he ran through it and he ran by every single defensive back and none of them had any chance of catching him. I mean, and Jarvis Landry, like you said, we had a similar play last year where it was against the Panthers last year where they ran the counter play to counter Luke Kuechly and Jarvis Landry was running the ball for like 50 yards. It's a similar play, just a different wrinkle where they had the option pass, the shovel pass to Landry, and he gained like another 30 yards on the play. And a lot of when he got an open space, the best thing about Jarvis Landry when he plays is when you get him in space and he gets the ball, he's not going to blow by you, but he's really good at breaking tackles and getting yards after the catch because he's just going to put his head down and he's just going to drill through people. And he's a physical wide receiver. He's a big dude for his size. I think he's like 5'11", 6 foot, like maybe 215, 220. He's a big dude. He's kind of built like a running back. So the way that he was used was really encouraging, especially with the fact that OBJ was just getting held all the time throughout the entire game. And
held, choked, yeah, hogtied.
Well, the choking thing, you know, I've seen the videos of it. It did look like that OBJ did punch Marlon Humphrey.
Oh, he totally punched him.
So
yeah.
At the same time, you don't want a guy to get choked. Yeah. But to be fair to Marlon Humphrey, even though he's a Ravens player, OBJ kind of started it.
Sure.
So, but at the same time, OBJ's probably getting frustrated because Freddie talked about it in the press conference on Wednesday. He's like, you know, I'd be frustrated too if I was just running down the field and not getting and just being held all the time. It wasn't so much that he wasn't getting targeted. It's the fact that every time he was running downfield, he was just getting abused by the defensive backs and no one was calling anything. So I'm not going to say which play specifically because there was a lot of instances where he was getting – people were being really physical with him after the 5 yards that you're allowed. But
yeah, and look, that really opened it up for Landry. They were showing a lot of attention. They were shadowing him a lot.
They were
with the
doubling
safety.
OBJ almost every play. Yep. And if you have Jarvis Landry one-on-one, he's one of the best route runners in the NFL. He's going to find a way open. And like I said, he's super physical. And once you get the run game going with Nick Chubb, I think the Browns, at least the way that their team is set up, some teams can pass and then set up the run. I don't think the Browns are like that. I think the Browns have to be able to establish a good running game to then get those play actions to help Baker, to then make those quick passing plays on different things more effective, because that really opens up the rest of the team if Nick Chubb's breaking off 5, 6, 8 yard runs and then eventually like a 20, 25 yard run sometimes.
You know, Graham, I just got really tired of hearing about the Ravens.
Me too.
It's funny
because Earl Thomas was talking so much trash.
I know. It's like the Browns had a couple of bad weeks and everyone around the NFL just kind of assumed, haha, they're still the Browns. We can talk all this mess and it's not going to matter. And everyone had pretty much crowned the Ravens already. And it's really inspiring to see the Browns go into Baltimore win like this, because let's be honest, we haven't had games like this much, okay?
No, really,
especially
just last year.
Especially in Baltimore, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Ravens are not as good a team as they appeared to be early in the season. I think they're a better team than they appeared to be on Sunday. But I will say this, for a team who's supposed to kind of be a great defensive team, their secondary is a mess. They had a lot of blown coverages and mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, one play that I could highlight was, which I talked about last week on the podcast, I was wondering if the Ravens would be able to, you know, maybe overload the blitz on the right side where Baker had been running so often and send pressure that way. And then the one time they did, that was the play where Ricky Seals-Jones ran right down the seam. There was no safety there guarding him because Earl Thomas was on the other side of the formation. And he just ran right down the field. Baker saw the opening and he caught the ball, and Ricky Seals-Jones got like a 50-yard gain on the play. So it's those type of things that Baker was doing well and adjusting to. But we talked about this a little bit, you know, with each other after the Ravens played the Chiefs last week. The Ravens aren't going to be the best team when it comes to playing from behind, because the way that they run the ball and the way that they like to smash mouth people, get a lot of big plays, because they are by far the best rushing team in the NFL. I don't think people are going to question that, but if you can stop the running game and force Lamar Jackson to make big plays, he can do that in spurts. But there are times where their talent does hold them back because their receivers are not an elite group of receivers. And then their tight end, Mark Andrews, was limited for a lot of the game, and he was getting shut down by Schobert.
Yeah, Hollywood Brown dropped a couple passes too.
He did.
He had some big games early in the season, but he's still a rookie too. So
yeah, so I mean, if you can get the Ravens, and that's a blueprint for a lot of teams, if you can get ahead of the Ravens and make them, you know, if you're up 10 on them later in the game, it's going to be really difficult for that team to maybe come back if they're going to play like the way they had this week against the Browns. But on the flip side, while the Ravens secondary was missing stuff, the Browns secondary, again, playing with pretty much all backups except for Demaryius Randle, who came back, was excellent. Again, 3 turnovers.
Yeah, Jermaine Whitehead has been maligned by many, including this podcast. For
you.
Yeah, by me, because he makes dumb mistakes and
does
dumb things. But he was really great, and you have to give him credit. He played really, really well. He made some big plays, a lot of big tackles especially. And,
yeah,
you know, one of the things we said before the season was one area on the Browns we like a lot is the secondary, not just because of the top end with like a Denzel Ward, but because they have depth. And when Denzel Ward and Greedy Williams don't play 2 weeks in a row, and the secondary plays well 2 weeks in a row,
only four, six turnovers,
and also no Morgan Burnett, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive. It really is. And Steve Wilkes, it seems like this is 2 weeks in a row now. First the Rams, then the Ravens. And I guess three if you want to count, you know, whatever, the Jets or whatever.
Yeah.
And even in the first half against the Titans, it seems like Steve Wilkes has made some really good game plans for confusing opposing offenses and exploiting their weaknesses. And, you know, Steve Wilkes was a head coach last year for a reason. He's been a really good defensive coordinator. And I think just like the offensive line, the Browns have James Campen, who's been a top offensive coordinator in the league for a long time.
Offensive line coach.
That's what I mean. Offensive line coach, yes. Thank you. You know, the Browns have talent in the roster, and they have a good coaching staff. Games like this should happen. And this is evidence that the whole season is not falling. And now I'm optimistic as hell. And if the Browns lose this week, I'd be shocked. We're going to the Super Bowl, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just – you know, but it's the ups and downs of football, you know?
I mean, the defense has really – Steve Wilkes really has done a good job with the defense. I know there was a lot of talk before the season that they were going to do more zone and things like that. But at the same time, Steve Wilkes has been bringing pressure besides the front four players. So he's been able to generate blitzes or do different zone blitzes, or even he has played man-to-man on occasion where that's not just depending on the front floor, which is not obviously the strength of our team.
Shut the front door.
They're obviously the strength of our team, but, you know, getting blitzes from people like Mack Wilson or Ardarius Taylor or Joe Schobert, who, by the way, Demaryius Randall, look, you're not a bad safety, but if we have to pick between the two of you, you got to pick Schobert. I'm sorry. He's got to get paid. Yeah,
Christian Kirk, he's out for the year, and it's sad because he's been a loyal Brown. He's been a big-time
team. He's the longest tenured Brown.
He's been a big-time team leader, emotional leader, defensive captain. Mack Wilson looks pretty good.
He does.
And, you know, I think the Browns have to pay Joe Schobert. He's so good.
I don't think there's a choice at this point.
He's
so
good. He is really good.
If you don't pay him, you're going to have to bring Kirksey back.
He's
got to
be a Pro Bowl this year. He's got to be a Pro Bowler this year, right?
Again, yeah, he'll be a Pro Bowler again. But if you don't bring back Schobert, then you're bringing back an aging Kirksey who has performed admirably when he was playing this year before he got hurt. But at the same time, I'd rather pay a younger Joe Schobert, someone that has shown that he's a more talented player, can be the quarterback of that front seven, really set up the team. And also he's good in coverage, which is a big deal now in the NFL, especially with the Browns. They play a lot of good teams that have a lot of tight ends talent. They have to have someone like that in the middle. And also, he is a sure tackler. He's not just a pass coverage guy. He's able to go up there and get dirty when they run the ball, and he can make tackles. He has been excellent in almost every game. Even in the Titans game, he was good in the Titans game. He has played well in every single game, and people don't really recognize it because the linebackers don't really get much shine. But Schobert's been really helping this team stay afloat, and we saw that last year when he went out for those games, and the Browns looked completely different on defense because they didn't have him roaming back there and then also being able to get up there and really get physical with the other team. We need to keep him because of how important he is to the team, both on the field and in the locker room.
Yeah, I would expect him to be the new defensive captain starting next year.
Yeah, I mean, if he has to get paid like $14 million a year, $15 a year, you have to do it. I'm sorry, you have to do it. You have the salary cap space. You built this team for a reason. If you want to continue to contend, it starts on the defense, and especially in Steve Wilkes' system where the linebackers, there's only two of them, that really creates a lot of necessity for those type of high-end talents. And he's used to playing with high-end talent.
Especially to have someone rangy like that.
Yeah, and Steve Wilkes is used to having some people like that because he worked with Thomas Davis and Shaq Thompson and Luke Kuechly when he was in Carolina. So he's used to using rangy linebackers and knowing how to work their strengths and weaknesses. Joe Schobert's very much the fulcrum of this defense, and we need to keep him healthy. He's not the best player on the defense, that's for sure, Myles Garrett, but Joe Schobert is definitely the fulcrum.
I mean, Joe Schobert's one of the elite middle linebackers in the NFL,
mm-hmm.
and no longer is he probably a Pro Bowler. He's one of the elite in his position, and you don't just let those guys go, you know?
Speaking of elite, special teams again.
Yeah, apparently, so Seibert still looks good. Nothing really to talk about there. Seibert looks like a legit NFL kicker.
Yeah.
And all this, you know, Dorsey kind of got harassed for picking him in the fifth round, especially when he was struggling early in the preseason.
I mean, which is fair.
Yeah, totally. But, you know, it's looking like he's a good kicker. And the Browns have yet to lose a game because of the kicker, and that's better than we could say last year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Gillen is AFC Special Teams Player of the Month, which it's his first month in the NFL. So,
yeah, I mean,
or his first month, you know, on a regular season roster.
He's played – no, this is his first year in the NFL. He was an undrafted free agent this past year. So, I mean, he has had three punts returned all of this year, and he has punted the ball 20 times.
Yeah.
And 11 of those have been pinned inside the 20-yard line. So he has qualmed any concerns that I've mentioned plenty of times about when they let go. And a very excellent punter in Britton Colquitt, but Jamie Gillen has been...
Is Jamie Gillen better than Britton Colquitt right now?
Right now, you could definitely make the argument for it.
Because, and going forward, there's no argument.
Yeah, I think as long as he continues to be consistent, he has had a couple shanked kicks, but at the same time, he at least they've gone out of bounds, so it's not getting returned. So that's been good. And also, the kickoff and the punt return coverage teams have been excellent. Absolutely.
They were struggling early.
Yeah.
And it didn't take long. And once again, the Browns have one of the better special teams coordinators in the NFL, and Mike Prefer. And this Browns staff has a lot of great coaches on it. And it doesn't surprise me that there's been a pretty rapid improvement. Pretty great week. It doesn't really get a lot better for this than the Browns, honestly.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this break to talk about this upcoming week. And we are back. The Browns play at the 3-0 San Francisco 49ers this week, who are coming off their bye week, which, yes, for some reason, there's a week four bye in the NFL.
Are you again ready for some football?
I am again.
A Monday night party.
Yes, I'm ready for a Monday night party.
Because it is a Monday night game again for the Browns. This beginning part of the season is a lot of primetime games,
yeah,
which is very different for us watching, usually just hanging out and watching the game at 1 o'clock.
It was nice to have a 1 o'clock game this week. And by the way, that probably should have been a primetime game.
And there's a chance from what I've heard coming up in the schedule, you know, if the Browns do well against the 49ers, that they might flex the Seattle game.
Yeah.
So they might move that up to 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
So, you know, but again, they have to one game at a time, which is what they have been preaching, which has been really good on the Browns. Like, they don't even talk about the last game. Freddie Kitchens has been like, yeah, I don't care about the Marlon Humphrey thing anymore. We got to worry about San Francisco, which is good because I'm glad they're not they're continuing to harp on it. Baker included, he moves on, at least he did this week. But, I mean, the 49ers are 3-0. They haven't really beaten any good teams, but the 49ers look a lot better than they had in previous years, even with the legendary Nick Mullins as the backup quarterback last year. He was really good.
Well, I mean, Nick Mullins is better than Jimmy Garoppolo, but.
Well, we're going to see that scheme, and we're going to see an old face from the Browns with Kyle Shanahan, who literally had a PowerPoint saying how he wanted to quit from the Browns, which was hilarious looking back now, but also sad back then. But, I mean, the 49ers have a really good offensive scheme. They're not super deep when it comes to high-end talent, but that's kind of how Kyle Shanahan likes it.
I think the 49ers are one of those teams that, you know, it's the classic cliche of they're not going to beat themselves, but I don't see them as an upper-tier team. I don't see them as an upper-tier talent team.
No.
And I'm actually almost more optimistic that it's a road game because I think that the Browns are, you know, to be honest, the Browns are a really young team. And I think a lot of times at home they get so amped up, they don't play with discipline, or they just assume that since they're at home they're going to play better. It seems like when they play on the road, they're far more focused. And
I would agree.
You know, that is a trend that has to change itself at some point. But for now, I'm like almost more comfortable with the Browns on the road just because they've shown so far, especially this season, that when they're on the road, they're more focused and they play with more discipline and they – quite frankly, just play better.
I mean, they're 2-0 on the road and 0-2 at home. So they're going to have to – and they have another road game this week. Now it's a West Coast game, but at the same time, the Browns are going to be able to get acclimated, and it's a Monday night game. So it's not like they're playing Sunday afternoon. Same time they'd still be playing basically at the same time they would usually be playing because it would be a 4 o'clock game in San Francisco. But, I mean, the 49ers are not a bad team, but at the same time, they're not a high-end talented team. They are kind of similar to the Ravens in some ways where they have, you know, not a lot of big names on defense, but they do have a couple big guys in there like DeForest Buckner. And if he does play, Dee Ford's a good pass rusher. But yeah, they did draft Nick Bosa as well.
And they have like a random hodgepodge of receivers and running backs that just throw at you.
I mean, George Kittle, their tight end, is by far their best offensive player, and he is scary good. He's probably the second best or third best tight end in the league behind and if he's third best, that'd be behind Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz of the Philadelphia Eagles, and then Kelce of the Kansas City Chiefs.
And then Gronk whenever he comes back to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, maybe in week 10 he'll come back. Yeah. But I mean, George Kittle is an elite tight end, and Schobert's going to be super important, and Mack Wilson this week, because Mack Wilson's shown he can play coverage. That was his strength coming into the year, and Schobert has also shown it as well.
That's the one thing about Schobert is he's kind of small, and Kittle's a big guy.
Yeah.
So
they're going to really have to be able to keep him in check, and sometimes there's going to be instances where the 49ers maybe put Kittle in the slot, and they can't move a linebacker out in the slot on him, or else he's just going to burn them with his athleticism. So the safeties that come down, the three safeties, Whitehead, or if a cornerback, whether it's Carey or Mitchell, I want to see them do that. I want to see them put corners up against Kittle. I want to see them kind of, you know, use those different instances and be able to create different matchups, because you can't just have one person on Kittle. You can't just expect Schobert to do everything. He is a good player, but you have to rotate coverage onto Kittle. But Deebo Samuel, the rookie, which I was banging on the table for the Browns this year, he has been a good receiver as well for them, and he's shown a lot of stuff. He's a good route runner. He's tough. He was my favorite player in the draft. So, I mean, take it for what you will, but the 49ers are going to be a challenge for the Browns, and it's a Monday night game, and we're going to that offensive line is going to continue to have to play well because they do have a good pass rush.
Yeah, Jarvis Landry may not play, which is unfortunate considering he just got back involved in the offense due to a concussion, but Callaway and Higgins are – well, Callaway's definitely back coming off his suspension. Higgins is most likely back coming off an injury. Mm-hmm. And I think that having those two guys would be really big because, especially with Landry out, obviously. You know, I think that Damian Ratley has kind of been exposed a little bit in a true wide receiver three role. I think he's still a developing guy to keep around. And I think he's shown some talent and some upside and some improvement, but he was definitely stretched out a little bit too thin. He had some drops the last couple weeks. So I think getting Callaway, all the Browns also could use someone to stretch the field. I think Callaway could be that.
Well, I think that could be another person besides Odell Beckham that has to stretch the field, because that's what a lot of he has done. He's been able to make it soft in the middle, which is why last week when we played the Ravens, he was going downfield a lot, getting double covered, while Landry and Ricky Seals-Jones were just eating in the middle of the field because no one was there. So if you can get Callaway to run deep and, you know, make people, because he is elite when it comes to his speed. He can get downfield, and we saw that last year on several occasions. As long as he is doing what, as long as he was coming back, he was in meetings with the team every single week. So he was in the building. He was still working out. He just wasn't with the team. That's a big deal because I think we talked about it in training camp. He came to camp out of shape. He was running with the twos a lot. But he's going to be an important piece to maybe unlock Odell Beckham and some of the other pieces in the offense. And then having Higgins back is just great for Baker because Baker just trusts him.
He's just reliable.
Yeah.
He runs the right routes. He catches the ball.
Yeah.
And he's a larger target too.
So, I mean, obviously missing Jarvis Landry would suck because he is one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. I'd say he's probably top 20, top 25 at worst.
But. Yeah, and not just – and he's a good receiver, but he's also great at everything else, like blocking and – things like that.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Callaway and Higgins are going to have to come to play, and especially the way the Browns played last week where they had the wide receivers out there blocking. They're both going to have to make some blocks and make it to get – so that way Nick Chubb and maybe if they throw in Dontrell Hilliard like they did last week, which was nice, by the way.
Yeah, thankfully. It took them long enough. We said it in the podcast. Like, you have a pass receiving back. Why don't you freaking
him or Dearness Johnson? I mean, clearly Hilliard seems like he's more ready at this point than Dearness Johnson is, but having – Hilliard in there and just having other weapons that you can go to, even if they're not better than what you have, they are still people that can create mismatches and create issues when they're running out of the 12 personnel, or even if they run 21 personnel, which is two running backs and a tight end, where they could do that. They could run different routes with each of the running backs. Chubb has shown that he is a proven pass catcher. He's had like drop or two this year. He's still not obviously completely comfortable catching the ball, but I think it's really important that you do all those different things against the 49ers because, I mean, they might be missing their best pass rusher. They might be missing they're probably going to be missing their left tackle. They're going to be missing one of their starting cornerbacks, and it's going to be it's going to be challenging for them to see if they can just get pressure with the front four because they do have decent talent in the linebacking core with Quan Alexander, who really was good for the Buccaneers for a long period of time and signed a big contract. They have and Richard Sherman probably watching Odell Beckham a lot of the time this week. The line started at 4.5 and now it's down to 3.5. It's a really tough choice if you're a betting person about how to take this game. Because if you take the 3.5 points, you're saying the 49ers are going to win this game by like maybe 6 points or a touchdown. But if you take the Browns, that means you're just really confident that either it's going to be a really close loss by them or they're going to show exactly what they did last week and start firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, this I think will be a good test to see if the Browns are going to be more of a Jekyll and Hyde team where you're just not sure what you're going to get game to game or if they really are kind of solidifying themselves after a slow start. And look, if the Browns win this game, they are 3-2, and they still have the Seahawks and the Patriots coming up. I don't think the Seahawks are a dominant team,
and
but
they're
good. And
we have to include the Bills at this point now, too, true, because of the way the Bills have played. So, I mean, if the Browns can make it through this tough stretch, so we were saying 7 games for a while, 8 games, the Browns can make it through 4-4 or even, God forbid, 5-3. They really are in good position to make a run at the division or at least at worst case a wild card spot.
Would you be shocked if the Browns come out and look disorganized again this week?
No, but at the same time, I have more faith that the Browns could maybe pull themselves back together if they come out a little bit slow, kind of like last week where it was 10-7 at the halftime and the Browns really had outplayed the Ravens for most of the first half. I could see them maybe coming out a little bit slower, maybe a little too amped up because it's a primetime game. They're playing against a team that is undefeated. They're trying to continue to show people that it's not a one-time fluke, but really they just need to play within themselves. It's like they've been saying a lot. They just need to worry about themselves right now. And that we are more talented than the 49ers. We are. So if we can, but if our scheme goes well and we can continue to run plays at an effective level, Baker continues to look comfortable in the pocket, I don't see any reason why the Browns can't win this game.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it should be a good game, and I have confidence that the Browns will look at least decent. And, it's really exciting to have a football team that looks like it's going to be at least very watchable.
Worst case, if they lose, I at least want the Browns to look organized and make it look like that they're still going in the right direction. Because you can still – there's no moral victories, obviously. But at the same time, if the Browns go back to revert to what they were doing in weeks 1 through 3, then, yeah, it's a problem again.
Yeah, we teased last week that we're going to have some Cavs podcasts coming up. And the Cavs training camp is starting to kind of roll into shape now. And there's less than a month until the season.
One of the guards is already hurt, so that's great.
Oh, well.
Darius Garland has minor foot injury.
Yeah, it's early. Minor. Let's just, he'll be fine.
He did have injury problems in college, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll find out. But the point is, we'll have Cavs podcast at some point soon here. Yeah. Look for a new Red and Blue coming soon. Check treecitysports.com, treecityrecords.com. We are Tree City Sports, branch of Tree City Records. I am at @abaker_sports on Twitter. Graham is at @gtmohan, as you all know by now. Graham, what family member should I shout out this week?
How about Carrie?
What's up, Carrie? Hope you're listening. If not, I'll know soon. All right, we'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.